Welcome to More Than Wealth with Darren Gold and Samantha Hotchkins from the Gold Wealth Management Group. In this podcast, we help business executives, business owners, and high net worth individuals navigate the multifaceted world of wealth planning. No matter how complex the situation, we provide financial advice and guidance to instill greater confidence in pursuing your life's goals. By leveraging the vast resources of UBS and collaborating with a team of external specialists, we'll delve into both basic and complex planning topics. Beyond the numbers, we'll also explore the stories behind the wealth. By interviewing business owners and thought leaders in our community, we aim to share insightful and inspiring tales of success. Join us on this journey where we explore wealth and the compelling stories behind it on More Than Wealth.
Hello, and welcome to the More Than Wealth podcast with the team from Gold Wealth Management Group. Today's guest is Dr. Andrew Budson, a leading expert in memory, Alzheimer's disease, and cognitive neuroscience. He is a professor of neurology at Boston University and the chief of cognitive and behavioral neurology at the VA Boston Healthcare System. Dr. Budson is also the author of several acclaimed books, including Seven Steps to Managing Your Memory and Six Steps to Managing Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia. Through his research and writing, Dr. Budson has helped countless families better understand memory and navigate the challenges of aging with clarity and compassion. Right now, here are your hosts, Darren Gold and Samantha Hotchkins.
Welcome back to More Than Wealth, the podcast where we look beyond the numbers to explore what truly matters in living a healthy and meaningful life. I'm Darren Gold, here with my co-host, Sam Hotchkins, and today's episode could not be more timely. June is Alzheimer's Awareness Month, and we're honored to welcome a truly exceptional guest, Dr. Andrew Budson. Andrew is a leading expert in memory, aging, and Alzheimer's disease, and he currently serves as the chief neurologist at the VA healthcare system in Boston. He's also professor of neurology at Boston University and a lecturer in neurology at Harvard Medical School.
Dr. Budson is also a prolific author who's helped translate complex neuroscience into actionable everyday guidance for people looking to protect their cognitive health. Whether you're caring for a loved one, worried about your own memory, or just curious about brain health and well-being, this episode is for you. Andrew, thank you for being here and welcome to More Than Wealth.
Thanks so much. It's great to be with you.
Great. So Andrew, let's start by mentioning your three books, because I think they're such an important resource. So the first book is the Six Steps to Managing Alzheimer's Disease and Dementia. Your second book was Seven Steps to Manage Your Aging Memory. And most recently, your book was Why We Forget and How to Remember Better. So what inspired you to start writing for the public? And how do you hope your books change the way we think about memory and aging?
Absolutely. Thanks for that question, Darren. So the six steps to managing Alzheimer's disease and dementia, its subtitle, as you know, is a guide for families. And I wrote this book because for my families whose loved one, you know, is in the middle of Alzheimer's disease or dementia, you know, the families need a lot of help. And even if I spent an hour with them, which, as you know, would be a lot of time for, you know, a busy clinician to spend with a family, it's still not nearly enough time to tell them everything that I want to about, you know, what are the ways, even without medications, that you can manage all the different problems that come up, like wandering, agitation, incontinence, you know, memory loss, shadowing, sundowning. So for that book, we talk about all those different things. And then the next book, The Seven Steps to Managing Your Aging Memory, that subtitle is What's Normal, What's Not, and What to Do About It. And I wrote that book because so often individuals would come into my clinic and say, you know, doctor, I've had these memory problems for 2 to 3 years, and I went to my primary care doctor and I told them about it. And they said, oh, Mrs. Jones, everyone your age has these memory problems. Don't worry about it. And, you know, after, you know, like the 10th or 11th patient who came in with a similar story, I'm like, oh my God, I really need to get the word out to people and empower them with the knowledge of what is normal changes in your memory as you're getting older, and what are the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease and dementia. I'm sure we're going to talk about some of those today. And so I wrote that book to give individuals and their families, you know, that knowledge so they know what's normal, they know what's not, and they know what to do about it, which includes a lot of lifestyle changes and things that I know we're going to get into. And then finally, the last book, the newest book, is called Why We Forget and How to Remember Better, The Science Behind Memory. And I wrote this book because I wanted to be able to help everyone of any age, whether they're a student in high school or college, or they're somebody in the middle of their careers, or they're older, like, how can people remember things better? And I did it with a co-author who's a neuroscientist and professor of psychology, a colleague of mine. And, you know, we realized that if you simply understand a little bit about how memory works, what you should do to remember things better just becomes intuitively obvious. You know, so one simple thing is that you're going to remember whatever you pay attention to. So like, you know, you're going into, you know, a party and you want to remember people's names. Well, you need to focus on their names, you know, as they're saying them to you, you know, simple things like that. So that's why I wrote the three books.
I just finished on Audible listening to that last book, and there are so many cool tips and tricks that I came from listening to that. So I really, really enjoyed that.
Oh, so glad.
Before we jump in, I just want to know about your career. Like, why did you dedicate your career to memory and Alzheimer's research? It's fantastic, but I'm just curious if there's a personal backstory or if there's just something in the science that really you connected with.
Yeah, it began with the science, and then it developed more and more into caring for people. So when I was in high school, I was actually fascinated by, you know, what is the relationship between the mind and the body and the mind and the brain, and how can we translate things like, you know, thoughts, you know, and ideas, you know, and things like consciousness, like how does all that happen, you know, inside your head? And so in college, I was a chemistry, philosophy, double major, sort of trying to get at, you know, both ends of the problem. And when it came time to choose a career, like, did I want to be a scientist? Did I want to be a doctor? You know, I really thought that if I'm going to want to study these sort of higher level aspects of cognition, I really need to do it in people. And what better way to do it than being a doctor? And as I began to take care of patients, that was when sort of the human side began to hit me. And it was just, you know, it's just devastating for individuals early, and then sort of perhaps, you know, luckily, as people get more impaired, they actually forget that they have memory problems. But for their families, you know, it's so devastating, you know. And then it was actually later in my life that I began to have experiences, you know, with, you know, first my grandmother, and then my mother-in-law, and then my father, who passed away of Alzheimer's in July of last year. And I began to have a lot of the personal connections. So I've been interested in this topic for a very long time, and it's become sort of more near and dear to my heart as my career progressed.
Yeah, no, it really is, you know, such an important field of work. And I think it's something, as you mentioned, we can all relate to one way or another, and especially as advisors. I mean, we're dealing with it. We work with clients through their entire life, provided we do our job correctly. So it's something that you know, we see quite a bit. So that's great. So could you, I think the big question we get a lot, or questions that I myself ask, is, you know, the difference between Alzheimer's and just normal age-related memory loss. So can we just start there? What are the early signs that people should be aware of? And then what's just, you know, people being forgetful?
There are three basic changes that happen with memory in normal aging. And one is that information may need to be repeated a couple of times in order for our older brain to sort of get a hold of it and put it into our memory store. The second is that when we're retrieving a memory, it may take a little bit of extra time in order for us to sort of find the memory that we're looking for. And the third is that sometimes to retrieve the memory, it takes a hint or a cue in order to be able to find the memory that we're looking for. But importantly, in normal aging, as long as the memory that we formed got into the storage place, which is called the hippocampus, it should be able to be retrieved, even if it takes a little bit of time or a hint or a cue. And I want to contrast that with Alzheimer's disease, because Alzheimer's actually damages this place where new memories are initially formed and stored, which is the hippocampus. And that's deep in your temporal lobes, so sort of deep in here. Once Alzheimer's damages and ultimately destroys the hippocampus, then even when information is repeated, even if you wait a bit of time or give her a hint or a cue, that information cannot be retrieved. And we call that rapid forgetting. And rapid forgetting is never normal. It should always be evaluated.
That's very interesting. That's helpful. What do we know today about how to reduce the risk of Alzheimer's? And is there our proven lifestyle habits that we should be talking about and putting into our own kind of day-to-day activities that you could maybe share with the audience?
Absolutely. There are so many different important lifestyle factors. And so I'm going to sort of dive into them in the order in which I think the science suggests is most important. So the first one I'm going to put here that's sort of like a summary of all of them. And, you know, you might think it's a cop-out, but it's actually an important way to think about it. So the overarching theme is to stay healthy. And the reason I want to start with that is that many people think like, oh, if I just take this supplement, you know, or I just make sure that I eat the right things or something like that. Like, that's not enough. You have to stay healthy. But let's talk now about the different ways to stay healthy. So part of that is simply, you know, making sure that all of your medical factors, all your health factors are under control. So if you're, you know, overweight, it's important to have a healthy body weight. If you have high blood pressure, it's important to make sure that that's being treated. Same thing with high cholesterol or high sugars. You know, all those things, you need to work with your doctor and get them addressed. But then over and above that, and some of these things we're going to talk about will help with those medical factors, exercise is probably the most important thing. And exercise specifically should be aerobic exercise. And the guidelines are it should be at least, note that I'm saying at least 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week. And that is important, not only for the sort of cardiovascular effects, but it's also critically important because exercise actually releases growth factors in the brain that help to grow new brain cells. And I was mentioning that one part of the brain called the hippocampus, where new memories are formed and where they're initially stored. So when you engage in aerobic exercise, you can actually see an increase in size in the hippocampus in as little as 6 months. And in one study, there was a direct correlation between how much exercise the person increased, how much the hippocampus enlarged, and how much their memory performance increased.
Is there any type of exercise more than others? Is it weights? Is it aerobic? Is there a combination? Or what should we think about?
So it has to be aerobic. Now, it's also important to do things for strength and balance and flexibility, things like yoga, Tai Chi, Pilates, some isometric weightlifting, you know, all those things can be helpful. But it's the aerobic exercise that's really the key. Now, people have looked at, you know, different types of aerobic exercise, and the studies actually are the best with walking and running. But that doesn't mean that all the other types of aerobic exercise aren't good as well, but those are the ones that are best studied.
Well, that's great. You've spoken about the role of sleep in memory and brain health. And, you know, years ago, I either heard somebody speak or I may have read it, but just can you talk a little bit about the importance of brain health and also what happens? Because I thought this was fascinating. What happens to the brain when we sleep?
Absolutely. So sleep is critically important for thinking and memory for a couple of reasons. So the first is what I think of as like the obvious one, which is that if we don't get good sleep the night before, how are we the next day? We're tired. And if we're tired, it's going to be difficult to pay attention. And if, as we said earlier, you're not able to pay adequate attention, then you won't be able to remember well. So that's the first reason sleep is important for memory. The second reason is one of the abnormal proteins in Alzheimer's is called beta amyloid. And it turns out we all make a little bit of this beta amyloid every day. It does have a normal function, and that's part of its metabolism. But we usually clear that amyloid out of our brains when we are sleeping. So we need to get enough sleep in order to get rid of that amyloid. But the third reason is what I think you were getting at, is it turns out that our memories go from sort of a short-term temporary storage to long-term permanent storage while we are sleeping. And we actually are beginning to learn some of the details. The evidence suggests that during non-REM sleep, we actually still do have dreams. Those dreams tend to be sort of recapitulating routine things during the day. If we wake up during one of these dreams, we often think we were just thinking about our day, when actually we were probably in stage one or stage two non-REM sleep, and we're cycling through, and that helps us to sort of pick apart what were the important parts of the day that we want to remember for a long time, and what are the unimportant parts of the day that we can simply forget. And then it's during REM sleep, when we have all those sort of wild, strange dreams, that we connect what happened over the preceding days or weeks with all of our other memories and all of our other sort of knowledge about the world. So if we don't get good night's sleep, we won't be able to hold on to our memories for a lifetime.
That is very, very cool and very interesting. I would love to talk about kind of the future and what you're excited about with research, and maybe there's some drugs coming to the market. Can you just talk about that and highlight some cool things coming to the market?
Absolutely. No, I'd love to talk about that. And after that, though, we have to cover a few more lifestyle things. I want to make sure we talk about diet, about social activities, and mental stimulation. But I am very excited about the new drugs that are really have just come out, and more are around the corner. So we have not had a new good drug for people with mild Alzheimer's disease since 2003. So it was really 20 years. And then there's now two new drugs that came in 2023 and 2024, so very recent. The first one that came out is called lecanemab, brand name is Leqembi. The second one is donanemab, brand name Kisunla. And these drugs are really paradigm changing in the following sense. So these drugs are antibodies. And antibodies are what our bodies normally make to fight off infections, like from viruses and bacteria. But these are antibodies that are made in a laboratory and they're engineered to stick to that amyloid that I was talking about, one of the abnormal proteins in Alzheimer's. And they're given by vein through like an IV infusion, either every 2 weeks or every 4 weeks, depending upon the drug. And they travel through the bloodstream and it sticks, they stick to the amyloid plaques in the brain. And then because there's an antibody on it, the body's immune system comes in and says, oh, there's an antibody on this, I should get rid of it. And the body's immune system literally just like eats it up and chews it up and destroys it. And what the studies show is by doing this, you can actually slow down the decline in Alzheimer's. So instead of people declining, you know, relatively rapidly, they're declining more slowly. And here's the thing that I really want to make sure all the listeners out there understand, is that these are drugs that, because they change the slope of the decline, they work so much better when they're started earlier. In one study, they looked at people with moderate Alzheimer's disease that had like a lot of plaques already in their brain, and it made almost no difference. If we catch people early in the mild cognitive impairment or mild dementia stages, when there's just a little bit of memory loss, we can change that slope by approximately 30%. And in people who are in the earliest stages of mild cognitive impairment, we can change that slope 60%. So the earlier that people who have a little bit of memory loss come to the attention of their doctors and get started on this treatment, the bigger effect it has. So the way I think about it, and it's not just a metaphor, but it's really explaining what's going on. As the plaques and then the next abnormal protein, the tangles, start to spread through the brain, you know, at some point, it's almost too late. There's too much pathology in the brain and we can't deal with it. But when we catch it early, then we can slow that pathology down so it doesn't accumulate. So I think about it sort of like cancer. And, you know, if somebody has a little tiny spot of cancer, I think everyone knows, you know, you don't have to rush to the emergency room that day to get it treated, but you don't want to wait 6 months or a year either, right? You want to get it treated, you know, within a couple of weeks at the most. And I really think of memory loss in the same way these days because of these new drugs. So I just want to make sure all the listeners out there are empowered with that knowledge.
Yeah, no, I mean, those are significant advancements. I mean, you're talking about, you know, 30 to 60% reduction in the pace or the slope, as you mentioned.
That's right.
That's amazing. And that's only over, at least from what I can remember about the industry, only over the last, 10 years or so, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, I mean, the first of these drugs that are good and that have been proven to work are FDA approved in, you know, in 2023. And I'm very proud to say, you know, that we have a lot of patients in our VA in Boston that are, that are on these drugs. And, you know, it's making a difference in people's lives. It doesn't reverse the memory loss. It doesn't make people better. But the data shows people will stay at, you know, roughly the same stage for much longer.
Early detection is obviously really important. Can you just talk about really quick just normal memory loss versus the maybe a red flag, maybe I should go see the doctor? Can you just touch upon like just maybe a few things people should be looking out for?
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing is people who have abnormal memory loss will often get lost even when they're traveling to a familiar location. So that's one thing that can be a red flag. Another thing that's a red flag is if somebody didn't lose things any more than, you know, anybody else when they were younger, and now they're starting to misplace their keys, glasses, wallet, cell phone, pocketbook, you know, whatever it is, and it's becoming a problem. They're hunting around the house. They're late for appointments because they can't find things. They have to cancel the credit cards because they can't find that wallet, you know. So that is another red flag. And the third one that comes up a lot is people, you know, like anybody can be telling a story to a good friend and say, oh my God, I told you that already, didn't I? And anybody can forget the answer to a question and ask it again. But when there's a pattern of telling the same stories to the same people over and over and over again, or asking the same question to the same people again and again and again, that's not normal. That is usually a sign of that rapid forgetting that we were talking about. And rapid forgetting is never normal, should always be evaluated.
Thank you for that.
So I'd love to just briefly mention diet, social activity, and cognitive activity, because those are also very important for everyone to do. There was just another study that I read about today about the importance of diet. And in particular, it was looking at processed foods versus whole foods or minimally processed foods. And this is actually, I think, a very important thing. So we really want people to eat a diet that is whole foods and also a Mediterranean menu of foods. So that includes fish, olive oil, avocados, fruits and vegetables, nuts and beans, whole grains, and then we can actually pull in poultry as well, like chicken and turkey from a similar diet called the MIND diet that's been shown to be beneficial. So those are the good things to eat. And I'm sure all your listeners out there want to know, well, what are the things that are not good to eat? And the answer is it's basically everything else. So red meats, fried foods, fatty foods, butter and margarine, pastries and most sweets, white bread, white rice, white flour, sugar sodas, sugar juices, diet sodas, diet juices. All of those things are basically, those should be once in a while things rather than every single day things. And I'd like to then touch just briefly on social activities. And it turns out that social activities are very important for keeping our brains healthy. There's actually good evidence that much of our brain function is to navigate social interactions. And we will lose it and it will atrophy and waste away if we don't engage in regular social interactions. And it's easy when people are young and working, they tend to be around other people all the time. But as people get older, they sometimes become more socially isolated. And so we want to make sure that people are not. And part of that is if one has hearing loss, it's important to wear hearing aids because people with hearing loss can be in a room full of people and still be socially isolated because they can't participate in the conversations. And then ultimately, they often stop going to social events because they say, oh, I can't hear. I'm not going to bother going. And the last thing is it's important to stay cognitively stimulated, which is just one of many reasons that it's such a pleasure to talk with you, because you are doing a tremendous service in providing some cognitive stimulation. So anytime you're learning new things, that counts. And so, you know, with your podcast and, you know, people are learning new information, that's a great way to stay cognitively stimulated. Now, people sometimes ask me, you know, what about those computerized brain training programs?
Yeah.
If you spend time on computerized brain training programs, you get better at the brain training programs, and it does not translate into overall brain health. But if you switch up the games every month, so you're always learning new games, that would be beneficial. But even better is to play games with other people. Mm. That's the best way. Keep playing different games with people so it's a social event as well as something new.
I love that recommendation.
It's encouraging to see there's so much we can be doing. And I remember growing up, you know, my grandmother, you know, battled dementia and eventually Alzheimer's. And, you know, the talk was, well, you know, your grandmother had it, you're going to have it. It was almost a foregone conclusion that, you know, it was a hereditary. But, you know, the kind of today's thinking has shifted so much. And it seems like there's so much we can be doing in lifestyle that really is going to put us in a much better position. So it's encouraging to see.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we need to wrap up. Thank you so much, Andrew, for joining us. Before I let you go, we have a tradition here on More Than Wealth to ask a health and wellness question, because at the end of the day, if you're not healthy enough to enjoy life, what is wealth truly? So I have a feeling I know some of your answers, but what would be one kind of health and wellness routine habit that you just couldn't live without?
Yeah. So I actually work hard to engage in some form of exercise every day. And I don't just do it because it's good for me. I love it. I really enjoy it. And I particularly enjoy running. I ran the 100th Boston Marathon in 1996 as a bandit. And I continued very slowly, did it very slowly, four and a half hours.
That's not slow.
That's not bad. That is not bad. Not bad at all.
And I've been running ever since. And I love my routine run. I live in Newton. I go to the Charles River and I run along the river. And when I go to when I'm in a new city, I love exploring and finding a running route, you know, wherever I am.
I agree. That's the best way for me to travel through a city and kind of learn the ins and outs of it is going for a run. I love that.
Yep. And all you need to pack are your running sneakers, and it's easy to do. So, well, it's been an absolute pleasure, Dr. Bunsen. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise and your insights with us today. Your work is helping so many people better understand the brain and navigate the challenges of memory loss. So for anyone who wants a deeper dive, we highly recommend checking out Dr. Butson's books, which we will list in our show notes. And to our listeners, if you found this episode helpful, please share it with someone you care about. Until next time, stay curious and take care of your physical and mental health. Thank you for tuning in to More Than Wealth. We'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the More Than Wealth podcast. Click the follow button to be notified when new episodes become available. Visit our website at advisors.ubs.com/thegoldgroup or give us a call at 617-261-2662. And don't forget to click the follow button to be notified when new episodes become available. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of Gold Wealth Management Group. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional investing advice. Always seek the advice of your financial advisor or other qualified financial service provider with any questions you may have regarding your investment planning.
Please do not transmit orders or instructions regarding a UBS account by email. For your protection, UBS does not accept and act on such instructions. Similarly, UBS does not accept trading instructions via voicemail, text messages, instant messaging, or facsimile. Do not include information containing account numbers, social security numbers, credit card numbers, passwords, or other personal information. Please speak directly with your financial advisor if you need to give instructions related to your account. Please be advised that where data regarding your account and or accounts is provided in this email, it should not be considered official UBS books and records. Official UBS records. Official UBS records are documents such as confirmations, statements, and portfolio management reports, which UBS provides to you periodically. In some cases, the data shown is taken from internal UBS systems and fluctuates with market and transaction activity. Assets in your account and or accounts that are not valued daily, for example, alternative investments and annuities, are accurately reflected only in official UBS records. You should review your official UBS records for disclosures about those values and all of the information needed to understand the data provided with this email. For non-clients, if you do not want to receive these types of commercial email messages, please complete the unsubscribe form at https://www.ubs.com/us/en/wealth-management/contact-us/unsubscribe.html. to indicate that you do not want to be contacted by email. For more information about how UBS processes your data, including how we protect your rights and respect your data, please refer to our privacy notice at https://www.ubs.com/global/en/legal/privacy/USA.html.